We are in Joshua 21 tonight. We did the bulk of the information we were going to get out of Joshua 21 on Sunday. So we still have a lot of the text in front of us in Joshua 21. But we're not going to have a lot to say about it. It's the city lists for the Levitical cities. And I think for us, maybe the most important thing to remember is where the different clans of the Levites end up in the land, and which of the sanctuary cities each clan of the Levites gets. And so let's start with the sanctuary cities, because we went over this on Sunday. There are six sanctuary cities. And since we're just starting out with these sanctuary cities, I'll give them all to you. Like, I'll give you the names. And then what we'll work on, I guess, over the next however long we have in Joshua, is we'll work on getting the names remembered and, you know, placing them on the map at the same time. And I've listed them out of order. So it's not like the first three are going to be on one side of the river and the next three are going to be on the other side of the river, or you could just kind of work your way up and down the map. So that way we'll stretch our brains out a little bit. So let's start with, let's see if we can remember which cities are on which side of the river. Right, Israel is split into east and west. That division is going to become really important just a little later on in the book. You've got the tribes east of the river and the tribes west of the river, and you have three cities on each side. So let's see if we can start with this much. Hebron, is it an eastern city or a western city? Yes. Let's see. For this early on, I'll tell you what, let's do this. For this early on, let me go ahead and give you what side of the river they're on. We'll work on one thing at a time. So Hebron is west of the river, Golan east, Kedesh west, Shechem west, Bezer east, and Ramot east. All right, so now you've got like a 1 in 3 chance with any one of these cities. So let's start with the easier ones. In the south, in Judah. Siri, be quiet. My apologies. My notes are talking back at me. Can you imagine, like 20 years ago, explaining to yourself you'd have your notes interrupting you in Bible class? All right. In the far south, in Judah, it's going to be either Hebron, Kedesh, or Shechem. Which do we think it is? We're looking at this one here in the south, in Judah. Is it going to be Hebron, Kedesh, or Shechem? Shechem is a good guess because Shechem is an important... Yes, it's wrong, but it's a good guess because Shechem is one of the most important cities in the history of Israel. And so you would imagine that it would be in a place like Judah. I'll go ahead and give you Shechem here, though. Shechem is in Ephraim. In fact, Shechem is going to have an important part to play before the end of the book of Joshua. Really important part. In fact, we've already seen some important stuff happen at Shechem. We'll review that once we get to the appropriate text. All right, so now you've got a 1 in 2 chance. Hebron or Kedesh? All right, now you've got a 100% chance because Kedesh is up here. We kind of did this with the tribes too, remember? Hebron is here in Judah. I was looking this up, by the way, because I want to make sure that we're not just going over stuff for the sake of going over it. Four out of these six cities have some important roles to play in later Israelite history. A couple of the ones east of the river we never really hear of again, Golan and Bezer, although you hear about Golan in the news all the time.
And Hebron's still around.
Yeah, Hebron is still around. Hebron is really, really important. You'll see a lot of stuff happen in the Old Testament in Hebron. A ton of stuff happens in Shechem. In fact, we've already seen a ton of stuff happen in Shechem. There's even some important stuff that happens in Kedesh in the book of Judges. And there's a lot of stuff that happens. I almost gave away the names. In this city here in the east. So let's... Now we're into the tougher ones. But you still have a 1 in 3 chance. And if we get wrong, then your odds are going to improve. So, let's see. We've got Golan, we've got Bezer, and we've got Ramot, which is also referred to as Ramot Gilead in the Old Testament. That's the one in the middle. Yes, very good. Because Gilead, remember, is this whole region right here around where the tribe of Gad is at. Some of it spills over into West Manasseh. I think some of it might spill down into Reuben a little bit. But if you hear Gilead, just automatically think, okay, east of the river. Right? It's fairly common for east of the river to be referred to either as Bashan, the northern part, or Gilead, the southern part. So we have Ramot right here in the middle, which means now you've got a 50-50 chance with these other cities that we never read about elsewhere in the Old Testament again. So the one up north next to the Sea of Galilee, what do we think it is? It's Golan. It's amazing. Y'all are 3 for 3 east of the river with the more obscure ones. We are like 0 for 3 west of the river. All right, Bezer is in Reuben. Again, Bezer and Golan, we don't really read about again in the Old Testament. It's not super important that you know where they're at. But the rest of these, you know, we'll be reading along in the Old Testament. And, you know, such and such will happen in Kedesh. Like, Deborah calls Barak to meet her at Kedesh. We know the story of Deborah and Barak, right? But I mean, have you ever been reading through the book of Judges and you just like read through all of this stuff happening and you have no idea where it's happening? Like, it might as well be happening on a cloud, right, as far as you know. Now we have a physical place for it. Deborah calls Barak up here. We'll have places for the rest of everything else, too. All right, so Hebron down in Judah, Shechem in Ephraim, Kedesh in Naphtali, Golan in East Manasseh, Ramot Gilead in Gad, and Bezer in Reuben. All right. Let's jump into our clans of Levi so that we can get into our text today. All right, the clans of Levi. Where Levi has 3 sons, and one of them gets a special portion. You have Kohat, you have Gershon, and you have Merari. All right, and I'll switch colors here in just a second. Making some additional notes here. Let's go ahead and jump into Joshua 21, verse 8. These cities and their pasture lands the people of Israel gave by lot to the Levites, as the Lord had commanded through Moses. Out of the tribe of the people of Judah and the tribe of the people of Simeon, they gave the following cities mentioned by name, which went to the descendants of Aaron, one of the clans of the Kohathites, who belonged to the people of Levi, since the lot fell to them first. All right, remember, Aaron is the clan that gets some special treatment, right? Because it's out of Aaron's household Let me put Aaron down here. It's out of Aaron's household that the high priest comes. In fact, all of the priests come from the house of Aaron. So, remember, Aaron is settled in Judah, Simeon, and Benjamin. So we're going to read some cities here. Verse 11. They gave them Kiriath Arba, Arba being the father of Anak, that is, Hebron, in the hill country of Judah, along with the pasture lands around it. But the fields of the city and its villages had been given to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, as his possession. And to the descendants of Aaron, the priest, they gave Hebron, the city of refuge for the manslayer, with its pasture lands, Libna with its pasture lands, Yatir with its pasture lands, Eshtemoa with its pasture lands, Holon with its pasture lands, Debir with its pasture lands, Ain with its pasture lands, Yoto with its pasture lands, Beth Shemesh with its pasture lands, nine cities out of these two tribes. Then out of the tribe of Benjamin, Gibeon with its pasture lands, Geba with its pasture lands, Anatot with its pasture lands, and Almon with its pasture lands, four cities. The cities of the descendants of Aaron the priests were in all 13 cities with their pasture lands. Okay, so Aaron, out of the sanctuary cities, gets Hebron, which is, of course, down in Judah. We should also note here that out of the tribe of Benjamin, they get Gibeon. Y'all remember from this book what's special about Gibeon? Who lives in the city of Gibeon? The Gibeonites, right? And who are the Gibeonites? Yeah, they are the ones that came to Israel and lied about themselves. And Israel made a covenant with them and then found out later that, wait a minute, these people live among us. We spent quite a bit of time studying the Gibeonites because, remember, the text notes to us that Israel fails to consult the Lord on it. And so we tend to think of it as the same kind of a sinful disaster for Israel as, say, like the sin of Achan, whereas the text itself does not treat it that way. God, in fact, condones is probably too strong of a word. So remember the miracle where Joshua makes the sun stand still and makes the day longer. That miracle occurs in defense of the city of Gibeon, right? So God not only is with Israel in defending this covenant, but actually performs a great miracle in defense of this covenant that Israel makes with Gibeon. They live in the midst of Benjamin, and not only do they get to live in the midst of Benjamin, but they also become a Levite city, and not just any Levite city, but a city belonging to the household of Aaron. Right, so these Gibeonites, you know, the deceptive Gibeonites, they have priests living with them through the rest of Israel's history. Okay, so, but out of the sanctuary cities, it's Hebron. Let's continue through verse 20. As to the rest of the Kohathites belonging to the Kohathite clans of the Levites, the cities allotted to them were out of the tribe of Ephraim. To them were given Shechem, the city of refuge for the manslayer, with its pasture lands in the hill country of Ephraim. So let's go ahead and note that down. They get Shechem. Let's see. Gezer with its pasture lands, Kibzaim with its pasture lands, Beth Horon with its pasture lands, four cities. And out of the tribe of Dan, Elteke with its pasture lands, Gibbeton with its pasture lands, Aijalon with its pasture lands, Gat Rimon with its pasture lands, four cities. And out of the half-tribe of Manasseh, Ta'anach with its pasture lands, and Gat Rimon with its pasture lands, two cities. The cities of the clans of the rest of the Kohathites were 10 in all with their pasture lands. All right, so remember the rest of Kohath lives in Dan, Ephraim, and West Manasseh. So this section right here. So in fact, and remember, Aaron comes from the clan of Kohath. So Aaron's only divided out because he's high priest. If you count Aaron and Kohath together, the clans of Kohath take up a huge, huge chunk of Israel. You have Kohathites all the way from here down on the western side of Israel. They're all over the place. Let's see. To the Gershonites, verse 27. One of the clans of the Levites were given out of the half-tribe of Manasseh, Golan in Bashan with its pasture lands, the city of refuge for the manslayer. All right, so Gershon gets Golan. Let's see. Bishterah with its pasture lands, two cities. And out of the tribe of Issachar, Kishion with its pasture lands, Dabarat with its pasture lands, Yarmut with its pasture lands, Enganim with its pasture lands, four cities. And out of the tribe of Asher, Mishal with its pasture lands, Abdon with its pasture lands, Helkat with its pasture lands, and Rehob with its pasture lands, four cities. And out of the tribe of Naphtali, Kedesh in Galilee with its pasture lands, the city of refuge for the manslayer. Right, so that's another one that Gershon gets. Let's see. Hamath Dor with its pasture lands, and Kartan with its pasture lands, three cities. The cities of the several clans of the Gershonites were in all 13 cities with their pasture lands. And to the rest of the Levites, the Merarite clans, were given out of the tribe of Zebulun, Yochneim with its pasture lands, Kartah with its pasture lands, Dimna with its pasture lands, Nahalal with its pasture lands, four cities. And out of the tribe of Reuben, Bezer with its pasture lands, which is one of the sanctuary cities, Yahaz with its pasture lands, Kedemot with its pasture lands, and Mepha'at with its pasture lands, four cities. And out of the tribe of Gad, Ramot in Gilead with its pasture lands, the city of refuge for the manslayer. And so they also get Ramot. Mahanaim with its pasture lands, Heshbon with its pasture lands, Yazer with its pasture lands, four cities in all. As for the cities of the several Merarite clans, that is the remainder of the clans of the Levites, those allotted to them were in all 12 cities. The cities of the Levites in the midst of the possession of the people of Israel were in all 48 cities with their pasture lands. These cities each had its pasture lands around it. So it was with all these cities. All right, so I know, long list. There's not a whole lot that I want to say about this, other than you probably remember Mahanaim as the place where Jacob encamped there at one point in his life. It was a fairly important place. Apart from that, really the only important ones really to remember are the sanctuary cities. So between the three sons of Levi, Kohath, Gershon, and Merari, and remembering that Aaron counts as a Kohathite, each one of them gets two of the sanctuary cities. So we'll remind ourselves of that in the future whenever we're going over the sanctuary cities. But before I pass on from that, why do you think, this is not something that's laid out explicitly in the text, so this is a discussion question. Why do you think that each of the sanctuary cities is also a Levitical city? What reason? Because that much is laid out explicitly, that each of the sanctuary cities is to be a Levitical city. Yeah, because the Levites are, the priests, at least in the household of Aaron. But then the rest of the Levites, what do the rest of the Levites do from the clans that aren't priests? Yeah, they're keepers of the temple, keepers of the tabernacle. So at this point in Israel's history, they are tabernacle servants. Then later, whenever the temple is built in Jerusalem, they will be temple servants. So they act as guards, they act as musicians, they do all of the grunt work around the tabernacle and later around the temple. So a lot of these guys, they travel around a lot. You might remember, for example, at the beginning of Luke's gospel, Zechariah ends up going to minister because it's his turn to go minister in the temple. Right? That's the way that these duties were sorted out, was that they had to take them in turn. So think about Merari, for example. Right? They live in Zebulun, they live in Gad and Reuben, if I remember right. Not particularly close to Jerusalem, not really all that close to Shiloh either. What would happen was basically the men of those clans would take it in turn to perform their clan's duties for the tabernacle. So it'd be like going on tour, right? You're an active duty Levite, right? And it's your turn. It's my family's turn to take care of this, so I've got to leave home for X number of weeks or months and go shovel out ashes out of the altar burnt offering. Wayne, I saw your hand.
Okay, I guess the confusing thing for me is that I don't know how I came to this conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought that Levites were priests.
Not all Levites.
And that was the confusing thing, is that some religious servants were out there.
Right. Yeah, that was something that we went over in Numbers. The priesthood, and I think it's addressed also pretty explicitly in Leviticus. That the priesthood is reserved specifically for the sons of Aaron. I seem to remember that being one of the factors in Korah's rebellion, because Korah is not of the sons of Aaron, right? Korah, I forget which of the clans he belongs to. But part of his beef was that he could never be a priest. Yeah, well, it's a fairly common thing, right? Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a fairly common assumption. I remember before studying any of this, that was kind of the impression that I had. So, yeah, if you're a Levite, you're a priest, but it's only from the sons of Aaron. So, now, they would have, there's a few other things that would cause, it explains why all of the sanctuary cities are Levitical cities. First off, these are each prominent places within their territory. And remember, the Levites are supposed to receive as their inheritance not just these cities, but they're also supposed to receive the tithe. And so these would be fairly convenient places for the tithe to be delivered to. It would also serve as, since these are sanctuary cities, they serve as a place of judgment, which at minimum, in the case of the priests often act as judges. Under the law, especially if there's any kind of question of false witness, if somebody contests, hey, I've been accused of this, but this guy's bearing false witness against me, then it was to be brought to the priest, and the priest is to take it before the Lord, and the Lord delivers an answer, like through the Urim and Thummim. So again, it makes a lot of sense to have these prominent cities also be places where you can find priests and Levites. Okay, so let's conclude Joshua 21 and get into Joshua 22. So Joshua 21:43. Thus the Lord gave to Israel all the land that he swore to give to their fathers, and they took possession of it, and they settled there. And the Lord gave them rest on every side, just as he had sworn to their fathers. Not one of all their enemies had withstood them, for the Lord had given all their enemies into their hands. Not one word of all the good promises that the Lord had made to the house of Israel had failed. It all came to pass. All right, so this concludes the entire inheritance section. The inheritance is done. The Lord has given Israel all the land. They've taken possession of it. They've settled in. Now, does that mean that everything is done for Israel at this point? Well, what remains for them to do? Yeah, they have to occupy it. Right? So we have already seen in several places where the tribes failed to drive out all of the nations who were still there. We heard this complaint from the sons of Joseph, right? From Manasseh and Ephraim. Hey, we're a big tribe. You only gave us one lot. Right? And remember, Joshua tells us what the complaint really is. The complaint is, you guys don't want to cut down the trees and drive out the inhabitants and go occupy the land. And, you know, y'all need to get off your keisters and go do this. So, everything that the Lord has promised them, He has done. That doesn't mean that there's nothing left for them to do. Now, we'll talk about this more later on, because this idea comes, it keeps coming up in the book of Joshua. That the Lord has fulfilled His promise to Israel, that does not mean that everything is done yet. All right, so let's jump into Joshua 22, unless we have any questions or comments about any of the sanctuary cities, Levitical cities, or any of the inheritance. Okay.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry I got in late,
but... Oh, that's okay.
Is the Thursday Bible study going to be on this Sunday?
Yes, yeah, so we're continuing what we did on Sunday. Right, same book, but we're moving forward. So we're not just going over the same material that we went over on Sunday. Yeah.
By the way, I wanted to give the reason why I'm late is to give thanks to God. You know, my mother had a fire in her home today.
Oh, no.
I had to go get her, monitor her for a little bit.
Is she okay?
Oh, she's fine.
Okay.
What it was is that on her oven, instead of pressing the clock, she pressed the oil, and she had been stored in the oven.
Oh, no. Oh, my.
Oh, thank God she's okay.
Well.
You know, Mom's
98. Yeah. Oh, my. Well, did she lose stuff in the fire?
No, thank God. The only thing she lost was a couple of pieces of stuff.
That she had in the oven.
And then, you know, some people have had the storing things in there.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, the fire stayed low once. Her oven got on fire, and the smoke went up in the microwave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank God that nothing worse happened. So, all right. Let's continue into Joshua 22, verse 1. At that time, Joshua summoned the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh and said to them, "You have kept all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you and have obeyed my voice in all that I have commanded you. You have not forsaken your brothers these many days down to this day, but have been careful to keep the charge of the Lord your God. And now the Lord your God has given you rest to your brothers as he promised them. Therefore, turn and go to your tents in the land where your possession lies, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave to you on the other side of the Jordan. Only be very careful to observe the commandment and the law that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you. To love the Lord your God, and to walk in all his ways, and to keep his commandments, and to cling to him, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul." So Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went to their tents. Now to the one half of the tribe of Manasseh, Moses had given a possession in Bashan, but to the other half Joshua had given a possession beside their brothers in the land west of the Jordan. And when Joshua sent them away to their homes and blessed them, he said to them, "Go back to your tents with much wealth and with very much livestock, with silver, gold, bronze, and iron, with much clothing. Divide the spoil of your enemies with your brothers." So the people of Reuben and the people of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh returned home, parting from the people of Israel at Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan, to go to the land of Gilead, their own land, of which they had possessed themselves by command of the Lord through Moses. Okay, you might remember a couple of weeks ago, Wayne had asked a question about the 2.5 tribes and where they were at in all of this. Because as Joshua was giving out the inheritance west of the river, there were occasions where the tribes would have to go and engage in some more combat with people. So, for example, whenever Caleb was taking his possession in Hebron, he had to go to fight against Hebron. He fought against Debir, and that story is recorded for us in the book. And I think Wayne had asked, all right, so were the 2.5 tribes still with them to fight like they were supposed to? And this speaks to that question that he had asked. They have still been present in Canaan during this time. Clearly, they helped during the military campaigns of the first half of the book. So against Jericho and Ai and the southern campaign and the northern campaign, the fighting men of the 2.5 tribes had to be in Israel west of the Jordan to help fight like they had promised. The book is unclear on what role they might have played in helping the tribes settle into their inheritance from chapter 13 forward. But regardless, they have been in the land, and now that everybody has settled into their inheritance, now Joshua dismisses them to go back to their homes east of the Jordan. And the emphasis all through this is on their faithfulness. All right, they have kept all of Moses' commands, Joshua says, and they've obeyed all of Joshua's commands. They've not forsaken their brothers. They have been careful to keep the charge of God. Right, he repeats this over and over again, and this repetition emphasizes their complete faithfulness to everyone that they were to remain faithful to. They were faithful to God, faithful to Moses, faithful to Joshua, faithful to their brothers, completely faithful in everything to everyone. And Joshua encourages them to remain faithful. Right? And the encouragement is just as repetitive as the description of their faith. Right? Only be very careful to observe the commandment, to love the Lord your God, walk in his ways, keep his commandments, cling to him, serve him with all your heart and all your soul. So the emphasis on you have been obedient, continue to be obedient. And this sets us up for the conflict of this chapter. Right, because up to this point in the chapter, these 2.5 tribes have been described as completely faithful. But Joshua has also told them that they need to continue to be faithful. And the central question of this chapter is going to be, are they faithful or are they going to break faith? Now, the reward for their faithfulness up to this point is that they get to return to their inheritance with Joshua's blessing, and they get to return with much wealth, very much livestock, silver, gold, bronze, iron, much clothing. So they're going back with all kinds of spoils, and ostensibly they are going to go settle into their inheritance and enjoy peace there, just like their brothers have, west of the river. All right, so that brings us now to the conflict that starts in verse 10. And when they came to the region of the Jordan that is in the land of Canaan, the people of Reuben and the people of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh built there an altar by the Jordan, an altar of imposing size. And the people of Israel heard it said, "Behold, the people of Reuben and the people of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh have built an altar at the frontier of the land of Canaan in the region about the Jordan, on the side that belongs to the people of Israel." And when the people of Israel heard of it, the whole assembly of the people of Israel gathered at Shiloh to make war against them. All right, so now the conflict is introduced, and Israel has not been in the land for any time at all. In fact, Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh had barely even returned to their inheritance. And already now, potentially something has happened that is going to cause part of Israel to go to war against the other part of Israel. All right, so here's how the conflict comes about. The 2.5 tribes, on their way back home, stop. The ESV tells us that this takes place at the region of the Jordan that is in the land of Canaan. The word for region here, so the ESV has translated it region. It can also be a proper name that we've already heard before in the text, Gelilot. In fact, we read it in a couple of the border lists. in earlier chapters, like in chapter 15 and in chapter 18. Gelilot. It's the Hebrew word for region, and it's also just a proper name. So, for example, in chapter 18, verse 17, Gelilot is named as part of Benjamin's boundary. In fact, I want us to look at this real quick. So keep your finger there in Joshua 22. We'll go back to Joshua 18, verse 17. All right. Talking about the border of Benjamin. Then it bends in a northerly direction, going on to En-Shemesh, and from there goes to Gelilot, which is opposite the ascent of Adumim. Then it goes down to the stone of Bohan, the son of Reuben. All right, now if we go back to chapter 15, verse 7, we read a similar description, except Gelilot is going to be given a different name. All right, so this is the boundary for Judah. And the boundary goes up to Debir from the valley of Achor, and so northward, turning toward Gilgal, which is opposite the ascent of Adumim, which is on the south side of the valley. And the boundary passes along to the waters of En-Shemesh and ends at En-Rogel. All right, so we even have some of the same places named. En-Shemesh is named in both places, except in chapter 18, verse 17, what we're told is opposite the ascent of Adumim is Gelilot. Here in chapter 15, verse 7, it's called Gilgal. All right, and Gilgal is a name that we ought to know from the book of Joshua, because what all happens at Gilgal? It's where Israel sets up camp whenever they first cross the Jordan River at the beginning of the book. They cross the river, they set up in Gilgal, opposite of Jericho, and Joshua sets up the memorial stones from the river there. Remember the 12 stones that they take up out of the Jordan River and set up as a memorial? That's at Gilgal. All right. In Joshua 18, it's referred to as Gelilot. And here in Joshua 22, again, the ESV kind of obscures this, but if you're reading along in Hebrew, it's they came to Gelilot of the Jordan, which is in the land of Canaan. Right, which, again, we also know as Gilgal. So this is the same place where Joshua set up the 12 stones from the river. And Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh come to this place, and somewhere, we don't know if it's close by the 12 stones, but somewhere nearby, they set up an altar. And we're told it's an altar of imposing size. It's literally an altar that is great to the seeing, or a great sight. This is the exact same phrase used of the burning bush in Exodus 3:3, by the way. So, in other words, it's not something hidden away or done in secret. It's not like the 2.5 tribes have kind of snuck off and built this little secret altar off in a corner somewhere. They have gone to one of the most important, significant places in Israel, you know, where the river memorial is set up. And they have built an enormous altar in a place where everybody's going to see it. It is something built to be seen, and it is seen and talked about. Wayne?
Here we go again.
Mm-hmm.
If you build an altar, they're supposed to make it out of hewn stone.
Mm-hmm. At least the ones for sacrifice, yeah. I don't know about a number of stones, just that it's supposed to be made out of unhewn stones. Well, that's kind of the central question of the chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Some creative license with it. Hold on to that question, because it's pretty closely related to like the central question of this chapter, Like you're asking, all right, what are they doing building this altar in that way? Right? That's the question that Israel has for them as well. So because, again, they've built it in such a way that everybody's supposed to be able to see it. And it is seen, and it's talked about. Israel hears about the altar, and it's a neat little twist, by the way. Israel is put in the same position here that the Canaanites have been in throughout the book. Right? Up to this point, we've not said anything about this lately. It really just happened in the first half of the book. But remember, this it happened constantly in the first half, where the Canaanites would hear about Israel, or they would hear about what had been done to Jericho, or they would hear about what had been done to Ai, or they would hear about what had been done with the Gibeonites. And then they would react. And it was almost always, you know, they would get their armies together to try to go to war against Israel. And now the author of Joshua is doing something neat with us, where now Israel's in that position. They hear something, and now they have to react. And they react in the same way, by assembling themselves to go to war against the other tribes of Israel. So, and we should pay attention, by the way, to the language that's used to describe these tribes west of the Jordan. All right, when the people of Israel, when the sons of Israel heard it, and they said, "Behold, the people of Reuben, the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh have built the altar at the frontier of the land of Canaan in the region about the Jordan on the side that belongs to the sons of Israel." When the sons of Israel heard of it, the whole assembly of the sons of Israel gathered at Shiloh to make war against them. Now, when this text is talking about the sons of Israel, or the people of Israel, what tribes are they talking about? We're not talking about all of Israel here, because they're going to war against Reuben and Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh. Yeah, it's the western tribes, but notice the way the text is referring to them as Israel. They've built this thing on the side that belongs to Israel. And so the whole congregation of the sons of Israel gathers together at Shiloh to make war. Wait a second. We're... Yes, that's really important to hold on to. All right, so we're going to hold on to this question about, wait a minute, this isn't a valid altar that they've built. And then the way that the text is already kind of treating them as if these eastern tribes have already been disowned. All right, so let's continue forward. Verse 13. Then the people of Israel sent to the people of Reuben and the people of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh in the land of Gilead, Phinehas the son of Eleazar the priest, and with him 10 chiefs, one from each of the tribal families of Israel, every one of them the head of a family among the clans of Israel. And they came to the people of Reuben, the people of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh in the land of Gilead. And they said to them, "Thus says the whole congregation of the Lord, what is this breach of faith that you have committed against the God of Israel in turning away this day from following the Lord by building yourselves an altar this day in rebellion against the Lord?" All right, so there's Wayne's question right there. What are you guys doing building this altar in rebellion against the Lord? Have we not had enough of the sin at Peor, from which even yet we have not yet cleansed ourselves, and for which there came a plague upon the congregation of the Lord, that you too must turn away this day from following the Lord? And if you too rebel against the Lord today, then tomorrow he'll be angry with the whole congregation of Israel. But now, if the land of your possession is unclean, pass over into the Lord's land, where the Lord's tabernacle stands, and take for yourselves a possession among us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, or make us as rebels by building for yourselves an altar other than the altar of the Lord our God. Did not Achan the son of Zerah break faith in the matter of the devoted things, and wrath fell upon the congregation of Israel? And he did not perish alone for his iniquity. Then the people of Reuben, the people of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh said in answer to the heads of the families of Israel, "The Mighty One, God the Lord, the Mighty One, God the Lord, He knows, and let Israel itself know. If it was in rebellion or in breach of faith against the Lord, do not spare us today for building an altar to turn away from following the Lord. Or if we did so to offer burnt offerings or grain offerings or peace offerings on it, may the Lord Himself take vengeance. No, But we did it from fear that in time to come, your children might say to our children, what have you to do with the Lord, the God of Israel? For the Lord has made the Jordan a boundary between us and you. You people of Reuben and people of Gad, you have no portion in the Lord. So your children might make our children cease to worship the Lord. Therefore we said, let us now build an altar, not for burnt offering, nor for sacrifice, but to be a witness between us and you, and between our generations after us, that we do perform the service of the Lord in his presence, with our burnt offerings and sacrifices and peace offerings, so that your children will not say to our children in time to come, you have no portion in the Lord. Okay, so we've hit up Wayne's question, and we've hit up what we just noticed, that the text had been speaking as if these eastern tribes had already been disowned, dispossessed, and now we have the answer to what's going on here. They have not built this altar as an altar for use. It is a memorial, which is why they've built it next to the other memorial in Gilgal. It is a memorial to remind both sides that they are one people, even though the Jordan is between them. They are one people so that in the future, the Western tribes won't disown the Eastern tribes. All right, so notice the really neat way that the text got us into that. Yeah, two sides of the same side. Very good. All right, so we're over time now. So we will wrap this up on Sunday, and then we've only got two more chapters left in Joshua. Then we get to all the spicy stuff, Judges. So thank you so much for your questions and comments and your kind attention this evening.